You're listening to Between the Stripes LOI podcast, powered by Diaga.ie and proudly sponsored by Flomax. Be sure to check out our brand new website, BetweenTheStripes.ie, while you can find us on Twitter at Between Stripes or on Facebook by searching Between the Stripes. Now, here are your hosts, Kieran Burke and Jonathan Breyer.
Hello everyone and welcome back to Between the Stripes LOI podcast. It's Kieran Burke and John Breyer, Series 2, Episode 11, a week off last week, but we're back with a bang tonight, John.
Back with a bang. We've got six top-class guests on. I can't wait, Kieran.
Unbelievable. I suppose we better tell the folks what we have on tonight. A bit of a special treat, really. We have Scottish League 2 champion Sean Dillon, former Longford Town legend, league title winner at Shelburne, of course, a legend at Tannadice as well, at Dundee United. Spent 10 years there, had his testimonial last year before moving to Montrose, and he's gone and won the League 2 Scottish title in his very first season there. So we're really, really looking forward to speaking to Sean Dillon tonight, John.
And he played every single match.
Every single match for a 33-year-old. Incredible stuff, really. Played all the cup games as well, so he's really settled in well there, and he's doing a bit of coaching as well, which is great to see.
Fantastic. And we've got a guy that's a lot of transfer speculation about at the moment, scoring a hell of a lot of goals in the first division, Georgie Kelly.
Yeah, I described him. I did this interview yesterday with Georgie, and really interesting stuff. I asked him about that speculation with Dundalk, and I've described him as the hottest property in the League of Ireland at the moment. 17 goals in the first division last season. He's got 9 so far, just one behind David O'Sullivan this season, and UCD looking really good for the title with him leading the line.
Absolutely. We have Mike Ahernoff from Limerick. What's going on with Limerick at the moment? There's all sorts of chaos on the field, off the field, protests.
John, it reminds me so much of the 2016 season at Longford Town. There's so much going on there. On the field, the team is substandard. Off the field, you have supporters at each other's throats. You have journalists at supporters' throats. You have the club releasing bizarre statements. It's Bray we've become accustomed to releasing the sort of statements we've seen yesterday from Limerick. And as a result of that statement, the Blue Army, their most vocal supporters, have now decided they're going to boycott home games. So it's really just a toxic atmosphere there. And I'm sure Mike is going to give us the rundown on that.
That's just a crazy situation. It takes the pressure a little bit off Bray, who we'll be speaking to Dan Gorman from Bray as well, won't we, tonight?
Yeah, mini revival at Bray. They had that huge win over Rovers recently, and they followed that up at the weekend with a 2-1 shock home win over Derry City.
Yeah, Gary McCabe looking back to somewhere near his best anyway in that match.
McCabe and Coughlin really stepping it up there, and they're going to be key players for Bray, and we've spoken to Dan about that.
It's concern at the events up in Sligo at the moment. They're struggling a bit on the pitch. There's been queries from fans about the negative play that they've got. We'll be speaking to Shane Morrison about that.
When you consider the absolute chaos at Limerick, for Sligo Rovers to only be 2 points clear of the Munster club, it really, really does paint an ugly picture. I think huge questions now are going to be asked of Ger Little in the coming weeks. They travel to Oriel Park at the weekend. You'd really fear for them there. If they are to get a heavy defeat, now they haven't had any heavy defeats this season. Most of their games they have lost have been with 1 or 2 goal margins. But if they were to just capitulate Oriel, as many teams have done this season, you would have to really worry yourself for the manager's future.
Indeed. And finally, we'll be speaking to Shane Marron from Wexford FC. And Wexford, another team that are terrible at the moment, Kieran.
Another manager that's under huge pressure. An 8-0 defeat on Monday night to UCD. It's the second time Wexford have shipped 8 goals at home. They previously did it against Drogheda this season. Off the field, attendances there are absolutely dire. They're struggling to get 100 people in the gate, John.
Well, I'm not surprised. I mean, you can't dish up 8-0 defeats and expect people to come back and watch that kind of football, you know, if you're lacking such amount of quality in the team. But look, we'll be talking to Shane and seeing what's going on there.
It's certainly a worry across the league at the moment, John. I know we're looking at probably improved attendances when you look at the likes of Waterford, and obviously Dundalk and Cork are doing what they're doing. Even in the top tier of the First Division, the attendances at Shells have improved, at Longford. But you're looking at clubs like Wexford struggling to get 100 people in the gate. At Loan, we know what's going on there. And we had the situation at the weekend at Cove where Stephen Henderson, it seems he offered his resignation. There was an emergency meeting called. There was a sit-down talks between himself and the board. They cleared the air and he's decided to stay on. And his players repaid him last night with a great 2-0 win in the quarterfinals of the EA Sports Cup over Longford. But again, there just seems to be a total lack of interest there from the local community. So it's really worrying times for a number of clubs in the League of Ireland.
Yeah, well, I for one delight that Hendo stayed on because he's a good manager, you know. I just hope he starts picking up a few more results.
Yeah, we'll speak a little bit more about that in depth later on. But folks, we're going to bring you our first interview of the night now, and it is with that legend, Sean Dillon. And just before we bring you this interview with Sean Dillon, we have to make apologies for the sound quality of this interview. We had major issues getting a secure line with Sean, I suppose. Maybe not the best connection over in Scotland, despite being a professional footballer, but please do stick with it, folks. It is a good interview, and the rest of the show is perfect sound quality, so don't just turn us off. Please do stick with us, and hopefully we won't have these issues in the coming weeks. But here it is, ladies and gentlemen, it's Sean Dillon. So, folks, we are absolutely honoured to be joined on the line now by a legend at many clubs. Of course, three major trophies at Longford Town, a league title at Shelburne, 10 years at Tannadice, where he won a Scottish Cup with Dundee United, among other things. And recently, he's picked up the League Two Scottish title in his very first season at Montrose. It's, of course, Sean Dillon. Sean, welcome to the show.
Some introduction, buddy. I appreciate that. Thanks very much for having me.
It's great to have you on, Sean. Obviously, I'd love to talk about the start of your career. You were with Aston Villa as a young player, but sadly released there before coming back to Longford Town.
Yes, pal. I wasn't... obviously, I was keen to stay at Villa. But my time was up, and I was very lucky. I always consider myself extremely lucky. Always have done, and always will. I was absolutely blessed to be picked up by Longford. And the decision to go to Longford was definitely a brilliant decision on my behalf, and I'll always be grateful to be given a chance to play first team football. And at a time, obviously, that was reasonably successful.
Could you ever envisage that success, Sean? As I said, two FAI Cups back to back, a League Cup, and European football, and I think that's probably where the name Sean Dillon first appeared, really.
Me actually next door neighbour back home, was still is my next door neighbour, was from Longford. That's all I knew about Longford. That was it. I met Martin Lawler, and after a number of weeks and a couple of different things happened here and there, I came in and trained with Longford, and I agreed to sign. I signed on the Monday with Martin. Martin was no longer the manager come Wednesday. And on the Friday, we played our first game away to Bray, which was a 2-2 draw. And I ended up in hospital after the game. I don't remember anything from the match. I had a concussion. I finished the match, but I don't remember anything about it. I woke up in Longford kit on the sofa the next morning. So it was an interesting first week at the club. But it was an amazing time. Obviously, the four seasons that I had at the club are incredible. Not only the football was brilliant, but the success that we had, but more the people that were there. You know, Aaron, there was a number of staff members, the squad that we had, and obviously fellas left and fellas came in. It was an incredible place to play football. The people at the town, the people at the club, Jim, going from the chairman, Jim Hanley, all the way down to the directors and the volunteers, and sadly people that are no longer there. Thankfully some that are still there, obviously keep in touch through social media and different things. But it was an incredible place, and definitely amazing memories I have of the four seasons I had there.
And from that, Sean, obviously a huge move for yourself came about to the mighty Shelburne under Pat Fenlon, and it's where you picked up your first League of Ireland title. What was that like as an experience to be playing for a club that was so highly held at that stage?
I was quite sad about leaving Longford. It was my decision to leave. The club had offered me a contract, and had done pretty much everything they could to keep me. And my decision to leave was purely down to the fact that I wanted to go full time again and take a chance at getting an opportunity to go, to go back across and be a full time professional in England again. It certainly wasn't an easy decision. Like I said, I had four unbelievable years and seasons with the club. I signed for Shelbourne. I remember going in and meeting Pat and Ollie after everything had been agreed, and Pat was basically, if we don't win the league, we failed. You must win the league. That was the way it was put, and that was it. So, but I went in again. I, again, I, can't was incredible. An older squad, I would have been 22 when I signed, and I would have been a couple of young lads in the squad that didn't play. James Chambers hadn't come through at that stage, David Tittle, Gary Deegan. Those boys would have been would have trained every day with us, but I was probably the youngest of the lads that were actually playing. You know, at 22, and we had a lot of experience in the team, some unbelievable players, and it was just an amazing time. Pat, Eamon Collins was his number two, and again, the staff there, the people at the club, were fantastic. I didn't get a chance to bond with, you know, with the fans as much as probably I did at Longford. I wasn't even there in Canada here. As soon as the season finished, unfortunately, things went sour and I had to move on. But it was an amazing time and probably the most enjoyable year of the season of my life. When I think about the fact that I was actually living at home with my mum, my dad, my sister, and I was a full-time professional footballer.
Certainly living the dream there.
Sorry?
Living the dream.
Oh, unbelievable. Like I said, I'd done it at Philip for 3 years, living in Diggs and as a young lad. And obviously, when I moved over to United, you know, I moved into my own place then eventually. But to be living at home, getting up in the morning, off the training, you know, home, have a nap, you know, not having any worries, not a worry in the world. It was unbelievable, and we were winning games, and we were playing well, and you know, it was just an incredible season. You know, we had a couple of ups and downs. The whole Dublin City thing, getting, you know, when they left the league, we went from being top of the league to third place, because our points against them had been wiped away. You know, so there was a couple of dodgy times, and but I mean, to go up to beat Bowers. Got 1-0 down to Bowes in the last game of the season to come back and beat them and win the league. You know, by, I don't know, I don't know whether it was goal difference or by a point. I can't remember, but we needed to win the game because Jerry had won their game or got a result. It was an incredible time. Like I said, it was just unfortunate it went sour so quickly after winning that game and winning the league.
From that, Sean, the move. The move to Dundee United obviously came about. What was your first impressions of both Dundee and Scottish football, and could you ever envision spending 10 years at that club? Incredible achievements along the way.
No, didn't. Certainly wasn't going over with the view of spending 10 years there. The club was sold to us. Craig Levine had sold us the club with a view to, look, listen, you come in, you do well, and you move on to big other things. That's what everybody's here to do. That was always the main aim, which was great. But I mean, I kind of have a laugh about it. I was probably just about good enough to get a contract extension as the years went on, and not good enough to get a bigger deal. So that's kind of where I was at. But I mean, you know, my debut was against Rangers, 5-0 defeat at Ibrox in front of 50,000. Again, an unbelievable experience to have that, and to go about with that. So it was an incredible time, and an incredible experience. And obviously, I've had some ups and downs at the club over the 10 years, but it's been an amazing time, you know.
Yeah, as you mentioned, maybe a little bit bitter towards the end. United were so close to promotion, and I suppose the disappointment of that may have just got you towards the end there, after that game against Hamilton. But then there was the move to Montrose, Sean. How did that come about? And did you ever expect Montrose to be up there at the very top like they were this season, to go and win the league in your very first season at the club? And to play every single game was quite an achievement as well.
Worse than it actually was. I'm not the type that is that's controversial like that. I was very frustrated, and I just felt that, you know, I didn't want people thinking that I didn't care about the result of the fact that we hadn't quite got promoted. So the Mirror to Montrose came about. A good friend of mine over here has just kind of got into the agency game, and I'd spoke to a few clubs about, you know, I had a few part-time clubs that were local contacted me about the possibility of me staying in the area. You know, I kind of made that clear from the time I was leaving Dundee United that I wasn't keen to move. Michelle is happy here, Shane and Finn are settled, and it wasn't something I was keen to do. To move, I had a couple of options down in England, but again, nothing that was worth me while up and leaving. You know, I looked at the possibility of going abroad, but I kind of had my head set on being part-time fairly quickly after leaving Dundee United, and looking at the possibility of work as well, and that's what I done. I jumped at the chance, and like I said, having met a couple of different managers, the manager at Montrose was the one that persuaded me to go and sign for him. And again, I feel very lucky and with the decision I made. I've only got back from Benidorm for 3 nights there. After winning the league, that was our reward for winning the league. And 26 of us went away, staff included, and it's one of the best times I've ever had. So I've been quite lucky in regard to the squads I've been involved in and the people I've worked with.
And you mentioned there was a possibility to move abroad. Was there a possibility to come home and return to the League of Ireland?
I spoke to a couple of people. You know, there was a couple of people asked, you know, if I was coming home. Not exclusive for you. I mean, you know, I was close to doing this or I was close to that. I spoke to a couple of people and that was mentioned, but I never had. You know, direct contact from any one club. You know, there's indirectly people that contacted me through other people, and like I said, it was nothing to do with, you know, League of Ireland. There was nothing to do with finances. It was down to the fact that, you know, they're really happy where they are, and, you know, I wasn't keen on moving, you know, despite the fact that obviously, you know, Ireland is home. So
maybe a return one day. Do you see yourself maybe at the end of your time in Montrose, whenever that may be, a possible return?
I'd never say never. I certainly wouldn't rule it out. I never have, and I never would. Like I say, I enjoy amazing seasons, and again, I feel very lucky and very blessed to have had those times at the, you know, at Longford and Shelbourne. Like I said, I certainly wouldn't rule ever returning. I loved my time there. It was a great, it's the best great league in the world. You know what I say?
100%. Sean, it's been a pleasure having you on. We could keep you on all day, and I'm sure we'll get you on again. But we love to end with a controversial question. We love to end with a controversial question. Obviously, you're based in Scotland, playing in the Scottish League, and the big news over there recently has been the appointment of Stephen Gerrard at Rangers. How do you see that one turning out?
Oh, Jesus. I wish him all the best.
He hasn't been in contact, no.
I haven't heard anything, mate. Nah, listen, you like to see everybody doing well. So, you know, he's had an unbelievable career. I'll certainly be watching with major interest, you know. I'll definitely be keen to see how he's gone. And of course, you want to see him doing well. And, you know, obviously, I'll get a hard time probably for saying that, because if he does well at Rangers, then Rangers will do well. But looking at, you know, it's... it'll be an interesting one. It'll be interesting to see how it goes. But how well it'll go, I don't know.
Sean, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you. Thanks very much for taking the time out to join us, and best wishes to yourself and all the family.
Thank you. mate. Thank you very much. Keep up the good work.
Cheers, Sean.
Between the Stripes LOI podcast is proudly sponsored by Flomax. For all your compressed air, vacuum and industrial equipment needs, simply visit flomax.ie.
Absolute pleasure and fantastic to have Sean Dillon on the show, John. But look, we're going to crack on now and look at the Premier Division results from the weekend. And we'll start with that huge, huge win for Waterford at the RSC 2-1 winners over Dundalk.
Yeah, a bit of a surprise this, or was it? You know, because Waterford have started so well this season. Little bit of a blip with those players suspended, but they're coming good again. And in this match, it was the Izzy Akinadi show. He's finally repaying, well, I'm not going to say a transfer fee, but...
He's finally turned up, John. He's finally turned up. Only one goal in the League Cup so far, hadn't any league goals to his name, but Dundalk simply couldn't deal with him on the night. Two goals, but a goalkeeping howler from Gary Rogers certainly helped him on his way.
Well, yeah, indeed. There was an early Akinadi header, which was saved by, I've put the evergreen Gary Rogers, but he really blotted his copybook. He came running out of the box and he didn't get to a long ball through, and Akinadi capitalised to make it 1-0. Before that, Michael Duffy had a great chance, but he shot wide on the counter. So Dundalk, he could have given Dundalk a lead, but then we had that awful... unfortunate foul on Stephen O'Donnell. It looked something and nothing to me, yeah. Karen, and I'm sure Stanley Abora is distraught about it as well, but it's going to be a broken leg for O'Donnell. He's going to be out for a while with
that. Yeah, and we certainly, everyone here at Between the Stripes, send our best wishes to Stephen O'Donnell, a great friend of the show in recent times. He's been a guest many times on the show, always a pleasure to speak to, so we hope to see him back soon, because he's a fantastic player, not just for Dundalk, but for the League of Ireland in general.
It's going to leave him a bit of a gap in midfield as well, you know, although they have got Shields and Robbie Benson, but you still need a...
Yeah, they're a little bit light on bodies at the moment. Shevdukas there has gone to London for specialist treatment. I think Adorjan hasn't really settled in the league at all yet. So there is question marks there for Stephen Kenny over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, and pressure after this defeat as well. Has left him 3 points short of Cork. Akinadi got his second just before half time, and there was still time for the ball to go up the other end, and Ronan Murray hit the lovely free kick to make it 2-1 and give Dundalk some hope going into the second half.
Yeah, great goal from Murray. I know from looking at the Soccer Republic highlights and then from reading the match reports and speaking to Dundalk fans there at the game, they're very unhappy about the editing of the Soccer Republic highlights the other night. Michael Duffy was booked for diving just before half time, and apparently that it looked to be a stonewall penalty for everyone in the ground, so that wasn't shown. And also Paul Keegan hit the post for Waterford, so there was a lot more to this game than Soccer Republic showed, as much action as there was in the highlights package, John.
The second half, Hulan had a shot. He just went wide. Pat Hooman, his header went straight at Vigoro, when he could have possibly done a bit better with that. Robbie Benson had a great chance, actually, which he screwed wide.
Should have scored.
And then a long-range effort that just went wide from distance.
He made a better effort of the long-range effort than the one from inside the box.
Yeah. Gary Rogers at the end stopped it from being 3-1. Shot palmed wide from Barnett. Could have been 3-1 at the end. But look, finished 2-1. Massive win for Waterford in that one, Kieran.
Yeah, in front of a huge crowd, over 3,000 at the RSC. And from speaking to supporters throughout the game, everyone said that this was just a simply fantastic game of football. Both teams, no interest in the draw. They both went for the win. It was an end-to-end attacking game of football. But obviously, as we said, a huge shadow over with that injury to Stephen O'Donnell. And we really do wish him a speedy recovery.
Moving on, Kieran, we'll look at St Pat's now, who beat under pressure Shamrock Rovers 2-0. Well, at the start of this, both teams and managers were under pressure coming into this one.
I don't think Liam Buckley's under pressure, John. I think Pat's would like to be a little bit higher in that league table, but Shamrock Rovers are the ones under pressure. They just can't seem to string results together. They go out and they beat Cork City 3-0, an incredible result, and then they go out and lose a Dublin derby to St Pat's. They've really, really struggled in Dublin derbies over the last couple of years since Stephen Bradley's been at the club, and this was another embarrassing defeat for them.
I have to ask you straight away, with that early red card for Joey O'Brien, what did you make of that? The refereeing changed his mind?
Disgusting tackle, John. I don't know what the referee was thinking getting the yellow card out. Thankfully, his other officials, it seemed to be the fourth official that gave the word that a red needed to come out. But that was an absolutely reckless and dangerous challenge from Joey O'Brien. And for a player that suffered with so many injuries himself, to put in such a reckless tackle like that, it's unforgivable in my eyes, John.
We go back to this problem again. Last season, it was a huge problem for Rovers. Lack of discipline. red cards, and here we are again.
I know last season when it was spoken about in the media, a lot of people pointing fingers at the manager that he needs to get a lid on the temperament issues within the dressing room. But I don't think you can blame anyone but Joey O'Brien. It was a complete mind melt moment. He just flew in for no reason. All he had to do was stand the player up, and it was going out for a throw in. Why he's lunged in, I don't know, but it's a terrible tackle, red card, and for me, he deserves a lengthy ban for a tackle like that.
Could well get a long ban, you know. I mean, it's a poor, poor challenge, whatever way you look at it. Those are leg breakers, those, yeah, Kieran. And, yeah, you know, thank goodness it wasn't, we weren't looking at a second broken leg in one weekend with that. But, really, really poor from O'Brien, and there's not much more we can say on it. Red card, and well-deserved red card. In the match itself, the remainder of the match, Ryan Brennan shot wide after Conan Byrne had a good effort on goals. But the deadlock was broken when Ian Birmingham earned a corner, and the ball went in after some shambolic defending, I think we can call it again. It was Graham Burke on goal, I think, Kieran.
It's the funniest own goal I've seen in a while, John. I really can't understand how that's ended up in the net.
Yeah, so that, I mean, they've got to have a look at these set pieces of Rovers, and it was another corner which led to a penalty. Ronan Finn fouled, and Killian Brennan made it 2-0 that. So the pressure just keeps piling on Stephen Bradley.
Right, John, I have a little rant every week, and this week my attention is turning to Ronan Finn.
Okay.
Greg Bulger's taken a lot of heat this season from certain pundits within the league, and rightfully so. Ronan Finn, people haven't been highlighting his performances. He's the captain of this team. His performances have been absolutely shambolic this season. His performance the other night was nothing short of a disgrace. How does a player of that quality, a player that's won league titles, that's played in European games with Dundalk, how do you take such a poor touch in the box? It's just pure carelessness, John. For me, Stephen Bradley needs to take responsibility in the fact that Bulger and Finn are playing every single week. They don't seem to be held accountable for their performances. And for me, Ronan Finn needs to take a long, hard look at himself. That penalty decision, obviously the right card was the major turning point in the game, but this penalty decision, it just helped Paps on their way to an easy 3 points.
Well, at least we're not talking about the goalkeeper for a change, Kieran. That's sort of...
He's been Rovers' best player the last few weeks, John.
Unbelievable. Something's got to give with this midfield with Rovers. You know, it's causing too much problems. They're just not living up to the hype, the reputation that they have, those players. I mean, Finn went to Rovers on the back of a great season with Dundalk and playing in Europe. And it was a strange decision at the time, I thought, but he really hasn't repaid any the investment that they've made in him.
You just look, when I look at this Rovers team, I see too many players, experienced players, that are just far too comfortable, John. And Ronan Finn is a perfect example of that, and his performances this season back that up.
So, you know, a few mistakes by the goalkeepers, and Bradley's chopping and changing, but yet with these experienced midfielders, they're making mistakes in matches, they're not dominating as we expect, but he seems very, very reluctant to change it.
He has young players on the bench there that everyone is raving about. I know Aaron Bulger is one that a lot of people and pundits within the league have been praising on social media in the last couple of weeks. Rovers are a club that everyone is saying they're moving towards a youth structure. We're seeing the success of Graham Burke on that side. Why not throw in a few more of these young players if the likes of Finn and Bulger aren't doing it?
He's got to, because what's happening at the moment is, I mean, where are they in the league? They're joint fifth.
They're in major pressure now to even qualify for Europe, John.
Yeah, 21 points after 16 games is just not good enough for Rovers. It's poor. And to me, Kieran, he's very, very lucky to still be in a job.
Yeah, 100%. They lost 13 games last season, John. They're on the exact same track this season. It looks like they'll lose the same amount again, looking at the results so far. So is that good enough for Shamrock Rovers? No, it's not.
It's not, and I think he's been bailed out by the former Graham Burke.
Yeah, I have to agree. He scored 9 of Rovers' goals. I think it's 23 Rovers have, so he scored a good chunk of those goals. And with his performances, I can see it very unlikely that he'll be there till the end of the season, John. There's surely got to be English clubs looking at him now, and if he's to go, where's the quality going to come from in that Rovers midfield? Because it's not going to come from Finn and Bulger on their current form.
Well, one player they were looking at was Ronan Coughlin, wasn't he?
Yeah, apparently he was there in pre-season, and they decided not to go with him, but he's obviously more of a striker, John. So, yeah. Look, they're having issues, as far as I can see, accommodating Carr and Shaw into that side. Neither player has really grabbed that position by the scruff of the neck. So, obviously, Alan Manis is going to come in July in the goalkeeping situation. That should improve things. But up the other end, Rovers really have more questions to answer.
Lots of questions, I'm afraid. Talking about Ronan Coughlin, he got 2 in the surprise win for Bray against Derry.
Wow, what a turnaround this has been at Bray since Graham Kelly came in as caretaker there. We'll be speaking to Dan Gorman later on in the next few minutes now on the show, and he's going to tell us about the situation at Bray regarding Martin Russell, because there seems to be a bit of confusion there and what his role is. But either way, since the two lads have come in there, there's been a massive turnaround in not just results and performances, but the effort from the Bray players has really stepped it up.
Yeah.
And you just have to wonder why they couldn't do this under their previous manager.
Yeah, Martin Russell as well there. He's experienced head, and they seem to be starting to play a bit, don't they?
Yeah.
I was impressed with Gary McCabe. He's done very little early on this season, but he had a good game against Derry. And remember, this is a Derry side that was absolutely flying, Kieran.
Yeah, we were talking about them as title contenders only a couple of weeks ago, John. Obviously now a result or two in their favour, and they very well could be in that title picture again. But this is certainly a huge 3 points loss for Derry.
Well, the first half was terrible, Kieran, I have to say. There was a lack of chances. McCabe at one end, Darren Cole at the other. It was a poor first half, but the game really came to life in the second when Ronan Coughlin headed in from a corner to make it 1-0. Another surprise goal scorer. He seems to be on a run of good form at the moment. Nicky Lowe equalised with a shot into the corner. 1-1.
Yeah, good player, Nicky Lowe.
Yeah, but it was Gary McCabe's good work that led to an easy finish for Coughlin to make it 2-1. Now, Derry had the chances, and Reece Gorman made a great clearance. Brilliant. Off the line. Great to see Reece doing well there, and he seems to be getting a good run. And, you know, it's a deserved win for Bray. 3 points. It was deserved, I thought.
Yeah, and one player I'd like to highlight was their goalkeeper, Moran, who came in for Dylan, who was injured, and he put in an excellent display. So maybe the two young goalkeepers there now are going to battle it out for the remainder of the season, and that's great to see.
Yeah, he made a great save from a free kick there at the end. I don't know if you saw that one, Kieran. That cemented the 3 points for Bray. So really, really good results, and I'm looking forward to speaking to our next guest.
Yeah, so Bray on the up, and we're going to speak to Dan Gorman now from the Bray People about the upturn in form at Bray Wanderers. So I'm delighted to be joined once again on the show this season by the Bray People journalist. It's Dan Gorman. Dan, you're very welcome to Between the Stripes LOI podcast.
Hi, Kieran, how's things?
Dan, an incredible couple of weeks at Bray. We had you a few times on the show last year in very different circumstances. It's much more an on-the-field discussion we're going to be having today. Bray, a huge win over Derry City last time out. It looks to have given new life to the Seagulls.
Yeah, it was massive. When they beat Shamrock Rovers 2 weeks ago, we were hoping that would kick-start the season. And then they followed it up then with very disappointing defeats to Limerick and Shuttle Sligo Rovers, which share the ones you have to be winning, really, the teams around you. And then you look at Derry coming down full of confidence, and you're saying, oh God, here's another one. But credit to the players, they were fantastic. Like, from the first whistle, they just absolutely bullied Derry. You would have thought it was the other way around. You would never have thought Bray were struggling. And when they got the first goal, it was well deserved. And Derry showed a bit of class with the goal, and I said, right, that's there. The win now out of their sails. But they took the goal, second goal, brilliantly. Great finish by Ronan. A great setup as well. And as you said, yeah, look, ahead of two home games, like at home, anything can happen. The two wins will come home. Upsets probably against Derry and Shamrock Rovers. So Bowes obviously are in around us. We're really hoping for a win there. And then Waterford, on their travels, aren't as good as at home. So again, we'll be hoping he can upset the odds there and get another 3 points. So in theory, by Monday, we could be level with Limerick if we win both our games. They don't pick up a win, which that doesn't motivate the players. They don't know what will.
As I mentioned there, Dan, there's been a huge amount of change at Bray in the last couple of weeks. Obviously, Dave Mackey left the club. Graham Kelly has stepped in as caretaker, but it looks like he'll keep that role now until the end of the season. But a big question that a lot of League of Ireland fans are uncertain about at the moment is the role of Martin Russell at the club.
Yeah, it's a big question, right? It's not one that I really have an answer for. He's there at every game. He's there training. I was waiting outside the dressing room on Friday to talk to Ronan Coughlin about his goals. And then Charles Martin whistled away to himself and had a care in the world. About maybe half an hour's kick-off at this stage. So he's definitely there. He's definitely heavily involved. But as Graham Kelly, he said, it's an advisory role, so it's nothing official. So for the time being, you've been saying it's been imminent, but we've been saying that now for nearly a month. So I don't know the full situation. No one at the club seems to know. Whenever I try and push for answers, I'm kind of sent on to someone else and told it's a matter of time, and told this has to be tied up first, and they're waiting on this, so there's always something going on. But the caretaker, he can only caretaker for 60 days, as far as I know, and for 60 days, sorry. So it's been about a month now, so obviously he's still have plenty of time, but it will have to be sorted in the next few weeks because he physically can't be a caretaker longer than that time period.
Something
will have to happen.
I'm sure Bray may be keen to keep him involved in some capacity, though, even after those 60 days, because the impact he has made has been incredible, really.
Graham. Like, Graham's absolutely lovely lad. He's been around the club a few years now, and he was involved obviously before this came along. He was delighted to take on the caretaker job. Who wouldn't want to manage your hometown club? Well, maybe not his hometown club, but close enough, and get a chance to manage League of Ireland, something to tell the grandkids, all that kind of thing. Mm. But now he's done well. Like, he just came in, he kind of galvanized the club, and got the players back believing. Like, under Dave, Dave was an absolute gentleman, and he's a thoroughly, thoroughly nice man. And I've had the time in the world for him, but for whatever reason, it didn't work out.
Just the man you mentioned there, Dan, Ronan Coughlin, has been in red hot form in recent weeks. How important is he likely to be in Bray's survival bid this season?
It's massive. Every club needs a goal scorer, and in Aaron Green we have a fantastic goal scorer, but he's obviously out with injury now, and it looks like he could be quite a while before he's back, and he's yet to score himself this season, which is massively frustrating at this point for him. But Ronan's got 3 goals now, and that was a single winner against Shamrock Rovers and the 2 goals against Derry, so his goals alone have got Bray 6 points, so that tells its own story. He's very, like, he's a confident young lad. Like, he's missed 2 chances, and he's been dropped a couple of times, and he'd never let it bother him. Every match he comes out, he'll do his tricks, he'll beat his man. I think he's definitely got massive potential, and hopefully this confidence now that he's got from winning, scoring a few winners will only egg him on again. Like, he's a very good young lad. He's normally would play out front, he's been playing out wide because of Aaron Green, but now he's got his place up front, and he's definitely grabbing it so far. But like, you look at all the clubs around, every club is struggling. A goal scorer can make all the difference. Mm. So hopefully he is the difference for Bray now.
This interview has obviously been pre-recorded, Dan. Tomorrow on the show, we'll be hearing from Micah Hearn, a well-respected journalist down in Limerick. Limerick look to have real issues on and off the pitch at the moment. And I'm sure you've seen their statement today, which was quite bizarre. It's usually Bray we're talking about in terms of bizarre statements. But is the wobble at Limerick now giving Bray real hope that they can dig themselves out of this situation and stay up this season, or at least get a crack at the playoffs at the very least?
Oh yeah, like every time you see a club get a play, Dwight Limerick ran Cork close on Saturday. We've seen they were winning the loop, and I was, well, I'm sure the club were thinking, oh no. But then they went and got a late defeat. So it's a tomorrow night's and for them. It's great for Bray. Like, anytime their club loses, they're celebrating. Rowan said himself that they're looking at the other results as well. Every time they finish a match, to see that no one else around them's picked up any points. So, yeah, look, it's, as you said, it's normally Bray or causing all the bad headlines. So if someone else is going to go out there and do what they share and then get distracted by that, Bray will be delighted. Mm. And it's only 6 points. Like, it's, I know 6 points I had to come by considering Bray have 7 all season. But as I said, like, winning against Bowes, winning against Waterford, and that's, it could be level. Not the most likely of a pair of victories, but it's only 6 points. It's a lot of games to go. It's definitely, like, get the form back as it is, get Ronan playing well, get the team chilling. It's definitely not too late. Like, it's far from anything like that. But considering a few weeks ago, I would have said it was doomed. It's mad what a few little differences can make. Just the fact that Graham came in, the players got the care again, I suppose. And you can see it in results today, beating Rovers and Derry.
Mm. Sadly, Dan, there has been in recent weeks some very negative headlines regarding Bray, and of course the whole situation with the Grant scandal. Has there been an impact around the town in regards of negative PR for the club? Obviously, attendances seem to be extremely poor at the Carlisle at the moment.
No, it's unfortunate. Like, in a way, you kind of wish things like that would have a negative effect in the town, but no one in the town really care or take any notice. It might mean they kind of mock them online a bit, but that's as far as we'll go. Like, unfortunately, just, there isn't the support there. Mm-hmm. The tenants, like, against Derry for the great win now, was 319 people. Like, 319 people at a League of Ireland Premier match on a Friday night. It's just appalling. There's no other way to put it. Like, it's just really is atrocious. And you can understand not many people want to come and see Bray lose the last few weeks, but support them whether they win or lose, and that's what you do when you support a football club. But now, unfortunately, like, even that, as you said, like, other clubs that would kind of rock the club a bit or something, but it just, it's barely made a rip in a Bray, because no one really bothers to read about Bray or care about Bray, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's a very sad situation when you hear, as you've said there, that the people around the town don't really care. And as I said, this interview has been pre-recorded before tomorrow's show, and on the show tomorrow we'll be discussing, there seems to be a similar issue in regards to a lack of link between community and club at Cove. There seems to be issues at Wexford. They're struggling to get more than 100 people in the gate. And there's 2 or 3 clubs in the league at the moment who just, there seems to be, obviously at loan as well, there's a huge disconnect between the community and the club. And regardless of the increase in attendances we're seeing in the Premier Division, that's very, very disappointing, and it's something those clubs, I'm sure, are going to have to address if they want to stick around.
Yeah, it's hugely disappointing, but there's no quick fix or stuff. Obviously, this has been going on for years and years. Mm. Like, Dean Zambra's up at Longford now. I remember about 7 or 8 years ago, we were at the dinner dance sort of awards, and we were sitting there talking about what you could do, and 8 years on, it's only got worse, like, so this isn't something that's a quick fix. It's not my job, so I'm not paid to do it, so I don't have any simple solutions, but it's not easy. Now, they got, when they were flying high under Harry Kenny, the crowds did pick up, still not to the extent I think they should have. I think that team deserved a lot more support. Like, they were flying high, but they, at that stage, they had handed out tickets to the schools, and the schools wanted to come along, and the schools were cheering. Again, it was mad after matches, seeing people crowding around waiting for autographs, whereas nowadays the Bray team would walk out of the stadium and they wouldn't even be looked at, they wouldn't even be recognised. But it's not a quick fix, it's not a simple fix. I don't know where it'd start, because it's got so bad now, there's just no support. Like, it's just the same dedicated 100 people maybe, which is not enough to fund the Premier League and go week in, week out. So it's something that people have to sit down and have a take, a long, hard look at it. And I don't envy them trying to bridge that gap between Bray, the community and the club, because it's just getting wider and wider, that bridge, and it's not going to be easy to fix it.
Yeah, well, hopefully some positive results in these back-to-back home games coming up against Bowes and Waterford can get a few more people out to the Carlisle. Dan, it's been a pleasure having you on once again. Thanks very much for joining us.
No problem, Karen. Take care.
Cheers, Dan.
BetweenTheStripes.ie is sponsored by Diaga. Based in Buncrana, County Donegal, Diaga are world leaders in top-class logo and graphic design, website building, film production, illustration, and much more. For further information, please visit Diaga.ie.
So our thanks to Dan Gorman for joining us on this week's show. Going to the showgrounds now, John. A 2-0 defeat at home for Sligo against Bohemians.
Yeah, bad result this for Sligo. And 2-0 at home to Bowes. Bad results. It looked promising early on with Reece McCabe. He forced an early save from Shane Supple. And Supple also made a great save from a cross as well. But after that, there was a real talking point when Raf Kotaro, he's obviously auditioning for the Olympics, high springboard dive. He got 10 out of 10 for me for that one, Kieran.
John, I know the lads made a laugh about on Soccer Republic. For me, it was no laughing matter. I have great respect for Raf Kotaro. He's been a great guest on this show in recent times and a really nice gentleman to speak to, but that was blatant cheating. His reaction afterwards, trying to con the referee, it was disgusting, really. And for me, I'd love to see retrospective action taken there, but obviously the referee's dealt with it. He's booked him, given a yellow card, so there'll be no more on that. But it was very, very poor to see from such an experienced player in the league.
Yeah, I mean, Kotaro's been around for a long, long time in this league. And, you know, what he did was, whether he just had a head melt or something.
In all honesty, as I said again now, I don't want to sound like I'm going in harsh on the lad, but he does have form for it down the years. It's not the first time. I've seen him do it against Longford plenty of times and in serious situations where Longford were fighting for survival, and he's gone out and he's conned the referee or attempted to con the referee. And this was another example of that in a big game for both clubs. And thankfully the referee got it right, but it was easy to call because it was at the end of the day, it was Raf that made himself look very silly with a very stupid dive.
He did. The TV replays.
Yeah.
Wow. Terrible, terrible. But after that, Danny Grant's show. He got a lovely goal for Bowes on the break, and he got his second from a lovely pullback from Owen Stokes, who seems to be playing really, really well. Maybe not getting the goals that he's deserving, but he's starting to really settle into his Bowes position.
He's finding his feet, but as you mentioned, two fantastic taking finishes from Danny Grant, a player that came in from the Leinster Senior League. So it does show there is a talent pool out there to be mined. And Keith Long has done very, very well to get Danny Grant into that team and playing so well. And this was a huge win for Bowes, but they do need to start picking up a couple more results like that, because if Bray are to keep this revival up in the coming weeks, Bowes could be dragged into a real dogfight. As for Sligo, as I said, only 2 points clear of Limerick. They have huge issues on their hands, and I'm sure the pressure now is going to come on Ger Little in the coming weeks.
Yeah, he's got to start picking up some results, because Bowes actually leapfrog Sligo as a result of that victory, which leaves Sligo very much looking over the shoulder at the likes of Limerick and Bray. So there needs to be an improvement there. There was no Adam Morgan. One man that's not getting a run is Ali Roy. I think it's about, you know, maybe he needs to be given a go. And he looked promising early season, but he's he's been on the bench ever since.
Yeah, look, we'll be speaking with Shane Morrison, a diehard Sligo Rovers fan, a little later on in the show. So we're going to move on from the issues of the showgrounds now, and we'll go up to the other end of the table, where Cork City had a late win against Limerick 2-1, and Joshua Hanlon with the winner there to put the Rebels back on top of the table.
Yeah, well, Cork needed this because, you know, they've been joint with Dundalk and Waterford, so a good win here against Limerick, even though it was tight enough 2-1, but they had plenty of chances, and early on, Cal Shepherd had a penalty save. To be honest, Kieran, I wasn't sure it was a penalty in the first place.
Yeah, I know we often say to referees that we'd love to see them start awarding penalties when players don't have to go down, that if they are fouled, but try to be honest and stay on their feet, you know, we'd love to see decisions awarded. But that one looked a little soft for me, but Shepherd's penalty was dreadful, John.
Oh yeah, it was poor, wasn't it? Gave Brendan Clark an easy job with that. It was mostly Cork early on. Cummins headed over from a decent cross. Gary Buckley stung Brendan Clark's hands with a rasping shot before Danny Morrissey went on the end of a free and an acrobatic finish to make it 1-0 against the run of play.
What a goal.
Yeah, great goal.
Against his former club too.
Yeah, he'd have enjoyed that one. But that lead wasn't to last, unfortunately, for Limerick. And 2 minutes later, Cummins equalised, as he so often does, with a header to make it 1-1.
I suppose that's a sign of a team that's struggling, John. They get themselves ahead with a bit of a wonder goal, but then concentration just switches off and straight away they concede an equaliser. And once Cork got on level terms, you're always expecting them to go ahead. And while they left it late, it was probably no surprise to see Josh O'Hanlon pop up with that late winner.
Yeah, well, Limerick could have gone 2-1 up, but Marco Sullivan shot wide after a decent counter-attack, you know, and that would have really...
That was a real chance, yeah, a real chance. Should have done a lot better.
Yeah, but then a horrendous mistake from Billy Detner. A really poor pass, Kieran.
I think Billy forgot that he'd left the Rebels a couple of years ago. A shocking, a suicide crossfield ball capitalised on by Cork, and as you said, they were duly punished.
Well, one man you can't give the ball to is Kieran Sadley, because he punishes you, and he put it on an absolute plate for Joshua Hanlon to get the winner 2-1. Good to see Hanlon getting on the score sheet. He's not had the greatest of times since he moved over to Bournemouth from Longford, but yeah, he got the winner there 2-1. There was still time for Brendan Clark to show his class with a good save from Sadley, but 2-1 in the end, Kieran.
Yeah, I'd love to get your views, John, on the title race. As you said, before this game, there was three clubs all level on points at the top. Cork now have the lead. I don't think Cork, Dundalk have... They haven't reached the heights they'd like, despite their position in the table. I think they're still struggling to really find their form. Dundalk have a lot of new players in there. A couple of foreign players have come in and they don't seem to be finding their feet in the league. Cork, obviously, lost a couple of players and they're having to deal with that. Waterford have performed well above expectations, are banging the title race, but they have a situation now coming up in the summer where they could lose two of their key players, their goalkeeper Vigro, and they could lose Courtney Doofus when his loan deal ends. So where do you see the title going at the moment?
Well, they'll be desperate to keep hold of those two, won't they? Two real standout performers this season in League of Ireland, Doofus and Vigro. On that side of things, that might be... You don't know who Waterford could bring in. You know,
that's very true.
They have good backing, yeah. So... They'll be planning for this already, and they seem to have the money to be able to go out and get somebody in. Those crowds that they're getting at Waterford will help as well. Yeah. Great gate receipts. It's lovely to see a full house there.
In terms of players coming in the summer, if you're looking at Dundalk, they obviously have the backing, and you're probably looking at the midfield area now with Stephen O'Donnell picking up that injury with Chidoukas. Struggling to get fitness, maybe that's an area. And we've spoken on our recent show about the lack of a playmaker in that side.
Yeah, that's maybe where they're going to be looking, obviously, to strengthen. But there's talk of a bid for Georgie Kelly as well there. Yeah. So not so sure with Dundalk, that side of things. But Cork still top. They have a 3-point cushion.
Are Cork the most settled side of the three?
I think so. I think there's still question marks about the team. Mm. They don't seem to be really putting teams away at the moment. You know, that 2-1 against Limerick, you know, and it took a late goal, didn't it, to win that one. But I suppose, is that what champions do?
That's exactly my point. I think Cork, out of the three sides, they seem to be the side most capable of scraping a result. We've seen that win over Dundalk recently where it was a very poor game of football. But Cork had the fight on the night to be able to go out and pick up a big victory. Obviously, Dundalk showed that capacity to their game too when they beat... Cork at Oriel Park early in the season, but Cork have obviously the experience of last season behind them, and for me, I would make them favourites at the moment. I'd love to get your prediction for the title.
I think so, and I think they've that 3-point lead now, and I think I'm still sticking with Cork, but there's all to play for.
Okay, John, we're going to move on to speak about the First Division results from the weekend now. So folks, we're going to have to apologise at this stage of the show. Usually we're the show that always champions ourselves as giving equal coverage to the Premier and First Divisions, but we've really gone over time with our interviews this week, so we're going to just fly through the First Division results from the weekend, bring you our interviews, and then we'll give you our predictions for the weekend. John, if you want to take us through the First Division results now.
Yeah, so it was Harps against Drogheda. This one finished 2-1 to Harps. Drogheda actually went to the lead through Sean Brennan, but Keith Cowan and Kieran O'Connor made it 2-1 for the Harps. Good win, that.
Yeah, O'Connor starting to come into form. There was a huge game at Talca Park, Shells versus UCD, and it was a late show from the students.
Yeah, James English for Shells and Gary O'Neill with the equaliser. George Kelly sent off.
Yeah, a late confrontation there, and the Shells players, or I think the Shells fans were slightly angered as well by UCD celebrating right in front of them at the death, but huge results for the students to keep them at the top of the table. And in a moment now we'll bring you our interview with Georgie Kelly, but on to Wexford, who were 1-0 losers at home to Cabinteely.
Yeah, that's right, Conor Keeley with the penalty there. Galway went to Athlone and won 3-0. Decent result for Athlone.
Yeah, keep the old goal difference down, yeah. Galway needed that though, just to get the confidence going again. It's been a slow start from them, but they're starting to creep up that table now, and the likes of Longford are going to want to start winning on a more consistent basis, or they could find themselves cut away.
Yeah, Owen McCormack amongst the goal scorers there for Galway. He started to net a few this season.
Yeah, good prospect.
Longford went on that long trip down to Cove, as you did, with the Section O bus, and they won 1-0 thanks to Sam Verdon's goal.
Yeah, it wasn't much of a game, but a good goal. Pitch was atrocious. Very, very little home support, a good travelling away support, but important 3 points for Longford, but they were turned over, of course, last night in the EA Sports Cup.
Couple more results, Kieran. Harps beat Galway 1-0. Jesse Devers with a late show.
And a stunner too, set up by Paddy McCourt, who seems to be playing the role of super sub in recent weeks for Harps.
Yeah, he's still class, isn't he? And then an absolute hammering for Wexford, I'm afraid. 8-0 at home to UCD, and that was without Georgie Kelly. Jason McClelland, one of the beneficiaries, with a hat-trick.
Yeah, we're going to hear from Wexford fan Shane Maron now in a second. As I said, our interview with Georgie Kelly as well. We had hoped to have a little bit more discussion on the situation at Wexford between myself and John, but we will leave that for another week now. Here's our interview, folks. Enjoy. So, ladies and gentlemen, we're delighted to be joined by one of the hottest properties in the League of Ireland at the moment. It's, of course, UCD striker Georgie Kelly. Georgie, you're very welcome to Between the Stripes LOI podcast.
Kieran, I appreciate you having me on. How's things?
Not too bad, Georgie. Exam time at the moment for yourself?
It is, yeah. Morning tonight job here at the moment, flat out, so we'll see how it goes.
How hard is it for a player to balance college and League of Ireland football, especially with such a demand and schedule in the First Division this season?
I don't think people realise how tough it actually is. I know it depends on what course a lot of boys in our team are doing, a few bivvy courses, but when you're in a tough enough course, it's hectic, especially around this time of year. It's not easy now.
What are you studying yourself at the moment?
I'm studying a BCom, Business Commerce degree.
Very good. Crunching the numbers,
yeah.
Well, your goal scoring numbers have certainly been impressive so far this season, Georgie. 9 goals, just one behind David O'Sullivan in the scoring charts. Yeah, I'm sure you're looking to catch that deficit up in the next few weeks.
Yeah, listen, I'm happy enough with what I have so far. I think I have a few more than what I had this kind of around this period last year, so it's positive, yeah. Yeah, I'm positive, I'm happy, we're going well.
Obviously, Georgie, we have to ask you about the speculation at the moment. A lot of talk in the media that there may be a move for yourself in the summer transfer window. Are you just looking to keep your head down at the moment, or can you reveal anything to us at this moment in time?
I can't reveal nonsense. I don't even know myself, to be honest, what the plan is. It depends on circumstances. So now I can't. There's nothing. I don't even know myself, so there's nothing to reveal.
Has it been unsettling at all? I'd imagine this is kind of the first transfer speculation you've been caught up in as a League of Ireland player.
It was, yeah. I wouldn't say it's too that much unsettling, to be honest. No, I just kind of ignored it. Kind of frustrating with people, like as in family, friends, thinking it's a done deal and texting and ringing you, but bit frustrating that way, but nah, listen, it's grand. It'll blow over.
Until the summer, and then we'll see what happens. But Georgie, you obviously started out with Derry City. I think that's a fact. A lot of people don't know. You moved to UCD in 2016, but you certainly came to prominence last season with 17 goals. Just how important was that season in terms of getting your footing in the League of Ireland?
That was, yeah. Obviously, I did start with Derry. I made a few appearances and whatnot off the bench that year in 2016. And then my first year at UCD, I didn't really kind of stamp my authority on that number one striker position. Like, so it was kind of in and out as well. So last year was kind of a huge year for me, as in my first year kind of playing regularly in the league. So it was nice to score a few goals, yeah, and do reasonably well.
And am I correct in saying that you had trials in England previously as well?
I was over, not that much to be honest. I was over in Bristol City for a few weeks there just before I left Derry, but nothing kind of materialised though.
And as an experience though, I'm sure that must have given you a taste for professional football and maybe looking to get back there. Yeah.
It's actually a great club over there and great setup, so it just kind of shows you what's kind of there if you get the chance, you know.
And one thing that's certainly standing out, Georgie, in this interview so far is that Donegal twang. And I'm sure as a Donegal native, it must have been some experience to get that hat-trick recently against Harps.
That was lovely, yeah. Just couldn't have gone any better, to be honest. It was kind of that kind of game, a big game where, you know, loads of people at home, loads of relatives, everyone was watching it and looking at the score. So it was lovely to score a few, yeah.
And amazingly, 3 points clear of Harps in the table at the moment, so it's shaping up to be a real ding-dong battle.
Yeah, they have two huge wins there. They've got there the weekend, so they're right back in the mix now, so it's going to be an interesting campaign now, yeah, to see who goes up.
Yeah, certainly from a UCD points standpoint, though, unbeaten in the last five league games. But I'm just looking at your upcoming fixtures here, and they're really popping out at me. A trip to Galway coming up, trip to Cabinteely, then it's back-to-back home games against Cove and Drogheda before a long trip up to Ballybuffet. So how crucial is this set of fixtures coming up now for UCD?
They're vital. These next, as you said, five or six games, so I think will kind of define our season and where we end up. Starting with Galway at the weekend, this is, especially after Galway losing there to Harps, this is a huge game like for them and for us. So 3 points now at the weekend will just set us on our way for the next couple of weeks, you know.
Yeah, and certainly this UCD team has been gaining a lot of plaudits so far this season, and rightfully so. I have to say, from seeing UCD against Longford recently, I have to say the students were the best team I've seen so far in the First Division. How much do you put that down to your manager, Colly O'Neill? He's a young manager in the league, but he's certainly getting a lot of experience already during his short stint at the UCD Bowl.
He is, yeah. Listen, you know, you hear it all about Colly. Colly's great. Colly's philosophy is fairly kind of laid back, he more or less lets us go out and play and kind of wants us to kind of express ourselves and go and try things. So it's for young players, he's kind of the perfect manager, you know. He's not that manager who's roaring at you for making mistakes, or he's kind of more or less lets you kind of a bit of freedom and go out, and it really suits our style of play, yeah.
And just as a club, obviously UCD, they've produced so many great players down the years across the League of Ireland, and some have gone across to England as well. As a young player coming through, I'd imagine UCD is the ideal place to be.
As I was saying, and I do say to anyone who ever asked me about it, although there's people have options to go away when they're 17, 18, I don't think there's many better options than to come to play regular first team football and as well to get a degree along with it, you know. Especially in Ireland, I don't think there's many better options, so it's an ideal place for young footballers, yeah.
And one thing that's really stood out for me for this UCD team, it's not something you'd always associate with UCD sides. You look to be a very physical side, but not in a negative view, not as in poor tackles or anything, but just physically, players well able to look after themselves, well able to last the full 95 plus minutes. Is the facilities in UCD a big part of that?
They are, yeah. Listen, you have everything here. You have three or four different strength and conditioning coaches. You've Owen Clarkin kind of leading it between prehab between different individual sessions, working on different people's what people need to work on. It's, you have everything here to set you up in that kind of regard. So it's facilities are definitely kind of helped towards that. Yeah, they're brilliant.
George, it's been great having you on. Finally, just on the First Division in general, how have you found the standard this season? Do you feel there's been a big step up from last year?
I think there's been a huge step up. Yeah. Whereas last year, obviously, Waterford kind of ran away with it, and there was no one really on their level. This year, there's at least 5 or 6 teams I think that could go and win it, you know, when they put a few kind of wins together. So it's a lot more competitive and a lot more exciting, yeah.
George, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much for joining us and best wishes for the rest of the season.
Cheers, not a problem. Cheers.
Cheers, Georgie.
Enjoying the show so far? Why not leave us a review on iTunes? Want something featured on next week's show? Get in touch via Twitter at Between Stripes or find us on Facebook by searching Between the Stripes. Finally, our new website address is www.betweenthestripes.ie. Enjoy the second half.
So as always, we love fan interviews here on Between the Stripes LOI podcast, and we're joined now to discuss the situation down at Wexford FC at the moment by Wexford FC fan Shane Marin. Shane, you're very welcome to the show.
Hey Kieran, thanks for having me on.
Shane, it's dark times at the moment for Wexford, it must be said. Myself and John were hoping for a lot more from Damien Locke's side this season. Only 4 wins last year, but a very young side down there, looking to play football the right way, it must be said, but results just not coming. Only 2 wins so far this season. It may not even match the 4 from last season. An 8-1 hammering against Drogheda early in the season, and that was followed up this weekend by an 8-0 defeat to UCD. So where are things going wrong at Wexford in your opinion, Shane?
Oh, it's kind of tough to put your finger on it, you know. I don't know. I really don't know. I'm at a loss to say. Like, I'm still today thinking about yesterday. And then that, like you said, that match earlier in the season against Drogheda. I mean, shipping 8 goals at home twice in the season. It's not great. It's not, you know. I don't know. I mean, in these kind of situations, you look at the manager straight away, don't you? But I don't know if that's the be all and end all. Are the players turning up? I don't know. I think perhaps yesterday some of them didn't turn up. There's certainly a good bunch of players there. There's certainly a lot of players there that should have the team. Not necessarily, not talking about winning the first division or maybe even playoffs, but there should certainly be further up the table, competing better and definitely not conceding 8 goals at home twice in the season, you know.
When the team takes a hammering like they did 8-1 against Drogheda, I suppose the first thing the management team looks at is they forget about maybe picking up results in the next few weeks. It's just about steadying the ship and tightening things up. And Damien Locke certainly did that. The next game out, they only lost 1-0 against Harps. Then there was a 1-1 draw against Cove. Lost 4-1 away to Galway, but a very good performance, and there was a controversial decision in that game that definitely swung it in Galway's favour. Then there was a 7-0 win over Athlone. 3-2 defeat against UCD, but a very, very good performance from Damien Locke's team. Then there was a narrow 1-0 defeat to Cabin Teely before, as you mentioned, yesterday's 8-0 capitulation. So,
after that, against Drogheda, I mean, you were saying that we lost 1-0 to Finn Harps and we lost 1-0 to Shelburne the week after there.
Right.
You know, it's...
But he did tighten the ship up defensively, and that's something myself and John have brought up in recent weeks on the show. Obviously, at the other end of the pitch, Wexford look a little bit light in terms of scoring goals, but defensively they did tighten up in those few weeks.
Is it okay though to say we only lost 1-0? So that's okay. My opinion, it's not.
Do Wexford have the resources though to be able to expect to compete with the likes of Finn Harps and Shells though, Shane? That's the big question, I suppose.
I think they do. I think they have very good players. Very good players that haven't done themselves justice this season. I definitely think that they can compete further up the division. Like I said, I'm not talking about winning the division or anything like that, but definitely to compete further up the table than what they are at the moment. I mean, as I always say, I'm only talking as a fan. From my point of view, from sitting in the stand, looking at the team playing, the mentality seems to be to not lose rather than to go out and try and win a game. And to be honest, I don't think any Wexford FC fan expects us to go out and win every game. And I, as silly as this may sound, I don't mind us losing a game if we went out to try and win it. But from my point of view, from my opinion, the way we're set up, we're going out to try and not lose a game. And it just seems negative from my point of view.
Is perhaps a lack of experience in the squad, though, a major issue? Obviously, in recent years, Wexford, or Wexford, UG Wexford FC, whatever, flag they're going under in recent years. They've lost the likes of Graham Doyle there and many other players that would have played with other clubs in the League of Ireland. This side, while the First Division is a young league this season, the players in it maybe don't have a lot of League of Ireland experience. So is that element within the dressing room leading to these sort of results?
Well, maybe not necessarily League of Ireland experience, but there's very experienced players in that squad. I mean, just flicking through, you know, the likes of Ross Kenny, Mikey Byrne, Thomas Croke, like, they've all got mountains of experience. You look at other players like Mark Slater, Sean Hurley, like, this is their second year with the club now. Like, they're not inexperienced players in any way. I mean, they know what it's all about. I don't think we could say that they're inexperienced at all. Look, it's just really tough times at the moment, and I suppose it's hard for everyone.
Just from an outsider's point of view, Shane, maybe you might have a different opinion on this, we'll see now, but from looking in from the outside, there seems to be issues off the field as well. Attendances, they don't seem to be improving, despite the fact Wexford FC, which I have to say is great, that they've gone to a fan ownership model. I think that's superb and something maybe a lot more League of Ireland clubs need to look at, but it doesn't seem to be reflecting through the turnstiles.
Yeah, no, it's fantastic that the club has gone that way. Absolutely fantastic. It's brilliant what they're doing. Do you know, the likes of the man on the street can have a say in the way that their club's being run. I think it's taken off steadily. I don't think, like I say, I don't know for certain, I don't think they've quite hit the numbers that they were hoping for. I mean, I know there was hopes of 100 to start with. I don't think it's quite got there, but I mean, it's certainly getting there. It's getting very close to that. It's a great thing that they're doing, and like, it's a really positive thing for the club. I mean, I'm sure there are other things off the pitch that are not great, but that's certainly one of the things that is really good and really great. And you know, anyone who's, I'd encourage anyone who has an interest in the club to go and get involved with that, because it's the way to have your say, you know.
Obviously, Wexford FC is only a newly founded club. This is their second season in the league. But what is the end goal for Wexford FC in these next coming years? Because with attendances like they are at the moment, there is certain people at the moment looking from the outside. Again, people looking from the outside don't have all the facts, wouldn't know as much as people going yourself every week, Shane, but there is people starting to wonder if this is a viable option going forward, if Wexford FC can actually survive in the League of Ireland.
Yeah, well, it's been, I remember I've read articles in the past myself, you know, does Wexford deserve a League of Ireland club and things like this. With the attendances, people just don't seem to be getting behind it at the moment, but I mean, you can only hope that it can improve. But you know, like last Tuesday there, we played Cabinteely in the Leinster Senior Cup, and I think there was somewhere between 30 and 40 people was the attendance. Then we played Cabinteely again at home on the Friday in the league, and I think the attendance was somewhere between 130 and 140. So you know, the fans just aren't coming out to get behind them at the moment, which is a shame. You know, obviously the fans have the option of getting involved and owning part of the club. So you would hope that, you know, that would encourage them to go out and support a bit more. But, you know, it's not all about just the fans coming as well. I mean, it's in League of Ireland circles, we've spoke about this, to, you know, for years, but how clubs can do more to try and get fans through the gate. And I don't know, perhaps the club could do more. It's tough, you know, as well. Not to be playing the volunteer card all the time, but you know, obviously there's people there that they're doing their best on limited time. You know, not everyone can devote, you know, days and days and days to doing such things all the time. But yeah, perhaps there is more that could be done to try and get the fans through the gate. What it is exactly kind of escapes me at the minute, but you know. Hopefully going forward, I don't know, hopefully maybe results might improve, fans might start coming back.
I suppose that's all what it comes down to really, Shane, isn't it? At the end of the day, it's results.
Yeah, absolutely. It's about the product.
I know you had a stat up on Twitter over the weekend that since Wexford FC have joined the League of Ireland, they've played 44 games, only won 7, drawn 10, lost 27, scored 34 goals, conceded 80. That's a goal difference of minus 46 and a win percentage of less than 16%. So it's easy to see why people aren't turning out.
Yeah, it's absolutely about the product. If you want to go and buy a new TV, you can go to a big fancy electrical store and you get a nice staffing order. You can go to Johnny on the corner, you know, who doesn't have a box for the TV and all this, you know. What product are you going to buy? You're going to buy the product that's, you know, that gives the best impression, aren't you?
Yeah.
You know, it's a kind of, I think, in my opinion, and I'll probably be slated for that, but for saying this, but I think there's little things that go with that can make things better around the club, and it's not necessarily, like, say, on the field or to do with results, but little things, you know, the foundations, when you can get them right, hopefully other things will follow. I'm sure you picked up a few weeks ago. I was told it was a pop at the club for stating that the goalkeeper was wearing a Wexford Youths jersey as opposed to a Wexford FC jersey. And it's just little things like that I think diminish the product, that take away from it, that come across, make things seem amateur.
Mm.
When it's my belief that, you know, no matter what you do it as professionally as you can. We might be amateur, we might, you know, the club might pay the players with pasta after the game, whatever we can do that's 100% professional, we should be doing it at all times.
Yeah, I'd have to agree, Shane. I think it's something that's been a huge issue with some League of Ireland clubs down the year. Obviously, they don't have the resources to be professional, but to be acting in a professional manner and trying to put forward a professional product, it's very, very important, especially for people that maybe don't follow the league as closely. And when you see Wexford FC fans, you know, having a pop online at Soccer Republic because they've displayed the Wexford name as Wexford Youth still, even though it's 2 years on from the rebranding. But yeah, then, as you said, when Wexford are going out and putting their players in Wexford Youth jerseys, it's not very professional.
Fair point, because I'm one of the ones that are constantly on Soccer Republic about it. But that's exactly, it's a fair point. It's an absolutely fair point. If the players are wearing a Wexford Youth jersey, then why not use the same crest on the graphics on the television, you know? But like you say, that just takes away from the kind of the professionalism that we should be trying to bring to the league. You know, it's just, it's frustrating at times, it really is, you know.
Shane, it's been a pleasure having you on. Hopefully there's going to be an upturn soon at Wexford FC. Thanks very much for joining us and best wishes for the rest of the season.
You're welcome, Kieran. Talk to you soon. Thanks,
Shane. Okay, so thanks to our two guests there for joining us to discuss the situations at their respective clubs. John, we're going to get the predictions from us both now for our St. Mel's Brewery game. You still hold a 1-0 lead. We seem to be deadlocked every week, so hopefully there's a bit of a different in predictions here this week.
Well, as long as it ends the season at that 1-0 lead, I'm quite happy with that.
Defensive style of play, John, if you end with a 1-0 score.
Look, we're going to kick off with the First Division previews, and we're just going to go for predictions here, Kieran, because of the time we've gone on at this stage. So, Athlone against Drogheda.
Drogheda.
Okay, you're going very quick tonight, but yeah. I'm in total agreement with that one. And then Wexford against Longford, Kieran.
Longford.
Yeah, Longford for me as well. Shelburne at home to Harps.
Harder one to call here. I think Shells have a really good home record against Harps. Harps' last win at Tolka Park was 2007, so for me, I have to go with Shells, considering they have that man, David O'Sullivan, banging the goals in for fun.
Yeah, Shells for me as well. Galway host table toppers UCD.
They drew earlier on in the season, but UCD had probably the better chances in that game. UCD's record at Terryland is very poor. I don't think they haven't won there in their last six games head-to-head. Again, it's going to be a tight one. I see this as a six-pointer at the top of the table, so there's a lot to play for. And in those sort of games, it's not unusual to see a draw. That's what I'm going for here.
Well, I'm going to go for a Galway win. And to keep the... if UCD win that, they're going to increase the gap there at the top. So I'm going to go for a Galway win just to give the rest of the league a bit of hope. And finally, Cove against Cabo.
Yeah, so as we said, Cove, their players responded midweek with a great win over Longford in the Sports Cup after some consideration from Stephen Henderson on his future. Cabo have underperformed this season. This is a game both sides will look at as a chance to get 3 points. Cove yet to win at home. That has to change at some stage. I'm going for a Cove win.
Yep, I agree with that one. Cove win as well for me. Should we move on to the Premier League, Kieran?
Yeah, 100%.
So first match up, we've got Limerick against St Pat's.
Yeah, so Limerick, obviously a lot of issues off the pitch there at the moment. St Pat's in decent form, had that great win over Rovers. I'd expect them to follow that up. I'm going to go with a Pat's win.
Okay, I agree. St Pat's win.
And just to say, obviously, folks, you will hear shortly from Michael Hearn, our Limerick guest tonight, and that you'll also hear from Shane Morrison, who's going to be on to discuss the situation at Sligo.
Shamrock Rovers against Waterford, Kieran.
Huge game for Shamrock Rovers, John. That defeat in the derby, as I said, it's slightly embarrassing given their record recently in Dublin derbies. Waterford, we know the form they're in. They see themselves as genuine title contenders. If Rovers are to stand any hope of qualifying for Europe, they're going to have to start winning big games like this. And I think they can do that this time around. They show it against Cork. Their potential to show up in the big games. They need to do it on a more consistent basis. I think they'll win this one.
That's a brave suggestion, Kieran. I'm going to go with Rovers as well. Not quite sure why, but I'm going to go with them for this one.
You're just following me as always.
Do you know, they're up and down, Kieran, and it's time they went up. So
Rovers haven't won back-to-back league games since March, I think I'm correct in saying. So yeah, they really need to, if they want to stay high up that table, they need to get some consistency going.
Okay, Dundalk against Sligo.
All the goings on at Sligo, can't score goals. Seems to be selection issues there. Very defensive formation, so they're going to look to make things difficult for Dundalk. Dundalk need to bounce back from that defeat to Waterford. Their home form is excellent. They're undefeated there this season. I can only see this going one way, and that's a Dundalk win.
Yep, I agree with that one. Tough one, this one. Derry against Cork.
Yeah, certainly. As we said earlier in the show there, Derry will see if they can get a couple of wins in the next few weeks, especially in big games like this. They can easily put themselves back in that title photo. Cork had that late winner against Limerick, as we mentioned. They're grinding out results. It's the sign of champions. Derry undefeated at home since moving back to the Brandywell, but Cork's away form hasn't been too bad this season. I'm going to go with the Rebels to be the far side to break that streak at the Brandywell.
Well, Derry are very good at home, but equally Cork top of the league, but I think that'll be a draw, Kieran.
And we should just say, of course, big news coming out of Derry this week. It looks like Ronan Curtis is going to get a big move to Portsmouth, so that's going to be a position Derry are going to have to fill. And while I'm sure they're probably very sorry to lose Curtis, they'll be proud to see a player of his ilk going over to England.
Yeah, that would, well, it's a great move for him, so we hope he does well over there. Last one, Kieran. Bray against Bowes.
Yeah, the Bray revival has been very interesting over the last couple of weeks. For me, this is a more interesting story in terms of Bowes' season. They have no back-to-back wins at all this year in the league. Inconsistency is killing their season. Defeat would leave Bowes just 6 points clear of Bray, which is very worrying. I think their momentum's with Bray going into this one. I'm going to go with a Seagulls win.
Yeah, I think Bowes have been underachieving a lot this season, but I think they'll have enough to beat Bray. I'm going to go with Bowes.
So there's a few different predictions this week, John. So hopefully
yeah,
we'll be not deadlocked again this week.
It'll either folks, be 2-0 or equaliser for
yeah,
you.
Folks, that's nearly been the show, but as I said, we have some cracking interviews to bring you before we go. First, you'll hear from Micah Hearn, the Limerick FC journalist. Huge goings on off the pitch at Limerick at the moment. And then you'll hear from Shane Morrison, a Sligo fan, who is very concerned about the Bitter Reds' chances of survival this season. So we're delighted to be joined on the line now by local Limerick FC reporter. It's Mike Ahern. Mike, welcome back to the show.
Good evening, guys.
So, Mike, can you tell us what's going on at Limerick? Because myself and John are certainly scratching our heads. Bizarre statements during the week, fans announcing a boycott. The pitch looks to be a mess down there. Obviously, the team putting in some below-par performances. There's talk of maybe a return to part-time football in the not-too-distant future. If Pat O'Sullivan can't find some more backing and investment in the club, is it as messy as it looks at the moment down at Limerick?
It certainly feels that way. I think anybody on Shannon's side will tell you it is a real mess. But I suppose, look, if somebody told you, Kieran, maybe 4 months ago when Tommy Barrett took over the reins of the club, that we'd be second from bottom with 13 points after 16 games, you probably wouldn't have felt the worst, because it did look like one of those crazy off-seasons for Limerick where nothing was done. We've signed what now looks like a lot of injured players because Tommy hasn't had a fit squad to choose from since the opening weekend of the season. And from that point of view, it looks like a mess. We had all the ticketing scandal at the start of the season when Limerick, for the first time in their history, announced categorised pricing for games. And that certainly put out a lot of supporters. But here we are 16 games into the season and we finally get a statement about it. So that hasn't been too endearing towards the fans. But I suppose one thing that's really struck me in the last couple of days is it now seems like Limerick FC only recognise certain groups of supporters and they don't talk to their whole fan base as a whole. Yes, they brought out a statement which categorised tickets, spoke about security at matches, and as well as that addressed the abuse that was addressed towards some of their own players. But they seem to be talking in riddles. The supporters react by saying they're boycotting Friday's game against St. Patrick's Athletic, yet they also say in the same vein they won't discourage any supporters from attending the game from the Blue Army. But there's a lot more supporters that Limerick FC have than the Blue Army. So, look, it just seems like the world of statements has gone completely mad. Mm-hmm. I'll probably be expected to make a statement about what I've said this evening. It's gone so bad here in Limerick at the moment. But really, I think when you look at overall this season, it's actually been quite a good season for Limerick FC. It's a year where we've got three players cross-channel. You had Paddy O'Connor shining with Leeds in the last month. You had Chidozie starting with Brentford. And as well as that, Barry Cotter at Ipswich and the man, I suppose, who ended Mick McCarthy's tenure at the club. But aside from that, we're bringing through huge amount of local players like Tony Whitehead, Will Fitz, Alan Murphy of late, Colin Walsh O'Loughlin, Killian Bruder, Tommy Holland is back at the club. There's a lot of really positive stuff happening in Limerick soccer, but as ever, the focus is on the negative.
But Mike, surely the public place is not the place for Limerick to be, as far as I can see, airing their dirty laundry, and that goes for both the club and the supporters groups down there. These statements are seen by supporters all across the league. For me, it's turning the club into a bit of a laughing stock, really. You mentioned there the situation with the categorised tickets. I think that was always going to face backlash. I know I've had a couple of friends that have travelled down to Limerick to watch a couple of games this season, and they said that they felt put off by the €18 price tag for Category A games and the whole thing with students, been asked for student cards, etc. So why didn't Limerick come out at the very start of the season when they probably knew they'd face backlash on this and say, look, this is the reason we are having categorised prices? Because I think that the points they made in the statement regarding being able to gauge match day costs if they have their sales online, etc., I think that they're valid points. But the whole thing with the supporters and the abuse, surely that should be done in a closed setting.
And it was done in a closed setting, to the understanding of the supporters group who met with Limerick FC at the tail end of last week. I believe manager Tommy Barrett addressed the Blue Army as well, just asking that maybe they have a little bit more patience with some of the younger players, citing recent debuts for the likes of Alan Murphy, where there was one or two verbals thrown at him. But look, I think that happens at every football ground in the country. But to go back to your point around the categorised ticket, I mean, there was a massive social blunder made by somebody within the club at the start of the season when they were questioned about the categorised ticket prices, that, you know, there were some, let's just say, not so funny answers given to good supporters of the club, which were widely seen across social media. And that was just one mishap at the start of the year. It was never really cleared up, particularly to the older patrons, and I see many of them still going to the markets field, around how it would affect them. I think we've, again, assumed that older people are able to use the internet. That's not the case. I mean, you have to cater for the long-time supporters who might not necessarily be able to pick up a tablet or a smartphone and be able to buy a ticket online. I don't think any of that was really cleared up for Limerick supporters from the very start. And you have to remember the form of the side at home. We've picked up 5 points at home this season. Limerick fans have seen them win just once, and that was a home game against Bray Wanderers, and we've beaten Bray twice this season in just our 3 wins. And when you ask somebody for €18 to continually watch a team not winning, it does become a little bit annoying. Limerick haven't incentivised ticket prices in the last couple of games, when I think they probably need it most. And the most startling figure for me, Kieran, is there was 2,200 people the week after Limerick beat Sligo for the visit of Bohemians to Markets Field. There was 703 there last Monday night. How 1,500 supporters can just disappear is beyond me. There's a lot of damage currently going on at the club, and I don't think the club committee is big enough to address those problems. It's a 3-man committee. It's more or less a closed loop between the three. And unfortunately, unless you've openness and transparency in a club in this day and age, and you're not doing your business across social platforms, which, as you correctly pointed out, are seen by absolutely everybody. I think at times the club think they're just talking maybe to the Blue Army on social media, but every single person across the world can see what's going on. It's laughable stuff, and look, it's been played out on social media, the wrong platform for me. And if anything, if I was an investor and if I had a couple of quid, and trust me, I do think the League of Ireland is an attractive proposition when you consider the ease at which you can get into Europe, you wouldn't be touching Limerick at the moment, because all you see is problem after problem. And yet, as I say, there are so many positives about football on Shannon's side, but we always seem to portray the negative.
Yeah, going back to the on-the-pitch issues, I'm taking you back to pre-season, and it was very, very late that Limerick got the squad together. And obviously, to me, the big problem they had was when they lost the two big goal scorers. Limerick really relied on the front two last season, Tozzi and Giadozzi Ogbeni, yeah, and they lost both of them. And I just don't think, I know they brought lots of players in towards the end, but I don't think you can replace players like that. And I think that's where it's gone wrong from the start for Limerick. And certainly, what have they scored? Eight goals in 16 matches? That's where the problem is to me.
Absolutely. And if you isolate just that problem, everything else is being blown out of proportion because of the frustration of people at the lack of goals, the lack of wins, and what looks like another struggle this season for Limerick FC. Tommy Barrett didn't come into this job with his eyes closed. He's the man that brought through at least half the current squad from the underage structure. And you have to remember, Pat O'Sullivan put a lot of money and time into the likes of Tommy and Declan Farmer at the club in its ascending years under Pat's tenure. And that is now coming to fruition. But in the midst of all that, we have all these problems. Yes, it's a local-based squad. Yes, there's the threat of part-time football coming in the next couple of weeks unless an investor is found. But at the end of the day, Limerick simply don't have a couple of key players at the moment. I've watched the majority of games this season looking out at a Limerick side who are well able to compete. One or two lapses in concentration, punished every time. I don't think there's a team... 5 penalties of the amount of penalties that Limerick have conceded this season. Unjustified in some cases, justified in others. But there's small margins. You look at the Derry game, Limerick utterly dominant, 44 minutes, switch off 10 seconds before half time. Then when they go chasing the game, they concede 2 goals. And that's been the story of the season. Limerick could potentially be 6-8 points better off, and everybody would be sitting up going, you know what, Tommy Barrett's doing a good job. But your point is absolutely correct. Limerick don't have a striker, 8 goals, top goal scorer. I couldn't even tell you if it's past 2. The best goal I've seen is Billy Dennehy's this season against Cork, but there hasn't been too much to celebrate in the stands. And you go back to €18 to watch 8 goals over 16 games. Fans want to be entertained on and off the pitch. It's not happening at the moment. It's not Tommy Barrett's fault. This has been a historic problem in Limerick over the last 4 managers that we've had. When we have prepared badly in pre-season, we've had a bad season. It's happened again this year, and it's no fluke that Limerick will probably end up second from bottom and in a playoff. And ominously, Finn Harps, you know, are still lurking around the playoffs in the first division. Nobody wants a repeat of what happened 2 seasons ago. But I do believe, even though there'll only be 12 games left when the next transfer window opens, Limerick can get out of this. There's only, you know, a win, 2 wins on the bounce, and you're out of the second from bottom position. I really don't understand a lot of the furore at the moment, but one thing is needed in all this, John. It's a consistent approach from supporters and from the club. The supporters are passionate people. The chairman is a passionate man. The committee are passionate people. There's no common ground. The Blue Army have been very quiet in recent weeks, and the stadium has felt really, really poor for it. Everybody, and I think the meeting last Friday was addressed at rectifying that, thought it was going to be rectified, and the club come out with a different statement than yesterday. There's a lot of annoyance, there's a lot of anger, and yet, you know the nature of football, it's a funny old game. A couple of wins and everybody will forget about it and they'll start chanting a new hero's name from the stands.
Mike, I think you've summed everything up there absolutely perfectly. I want to thank you for coming on the show. It's been a pleasure speaking to you, and hopefully we'll see a turnaround on and off the field at Limerick in the coming weeks.
Fingers crossed, guys.
Cheers, Mike.
Cheers, guys. Take care. Thanks a million.
Okay, so we're joined on the line now by a Sligo Rovers fan. Shane Morrison is going to update us on the situation at the showgrounds. It's looking very grim for Sligo at the moment. Shane, you're welcome to the show.
How are you, lads?
Shane, pressure surely starting to mount on Gerard Little now. Only 2 points clear of Limerick. When you consider the situation at Limerick at the moment, the wheels really seem to be coming off there. It's been a very poor start to the season for Sligo Rovers.
Oh, I've been terrible start. I don't know what's going wrong. Just gone AWOL lately now. And even with the likes of Limerick now and Bray getting a bit of points, we're looking the more bother.
Is it the lack of goals that's the major issue for Sligo, Shane?
I wouldn't say. Well, it's both ends of the pitch. It's the lack of goals and it's the mistakes at the back that are costing us our points.
And what does that go down to from the fans' perspective? Is the squad simply not good enough, or are questions now going to start being asked of the manager?
I think questions have been asked since he started, but lately now a lot of questions have been asked. But like even the players he brought in over the winter there, a lot, it kind of helped a lot of fans, and they were enthusiastic going into the start of the season. But once the season started, it hasn't materialised at all. There's been poor at the back, and just no, just a lack of leadership at the back and a lack of leadership around the pitch.
Yeah, looking at that, one man I'm surprised has been really underused is Ali Roy. You know, he looked very promising at the start of the season, but what's going on there?
What, who?
Alistair Roy.
I don't know. He started off the season well, and he was doing a few decent performances, but I haven't seen him now in the last couple of weeks. I don't know what's going on there. There seems to be no word, or even looking at the pitch, there seems to be no sign of him even coming back yet.
And what about Adam Morgan? Because he was absent at the weekend. Was that just an injury, or?
I think it was an injury. It seems to be an injury, but now going on Sligo, we don't know what's going on. But I think it could be lack of confidence too. Kind of, he's doing work great, but he's just not getting the supply up front.
Yeah, and Morgan sort of like he's one of those strikers that needs the ball into his feet and great supply, you know, because he's. He's probably that's what he lives on, you know. He's going to struggle if he's having to come back and get the ball and work, carve out openings for himself. So, you know, without that supply, that's where we're always struggling for goals.
Oh, definitely. Like the supply going into him is this high hoofing ball straight into him. So that's no good for a striker by himself up front. He needs the ball where he can run onto it. It's either onto his feet where he can lay it off and run again. But lately, now the last couple of games, any ball coming up front, it's coming from the back, from the straight hoof ball.
Shane, as I said in the intro there, considering the mess at Limerick at the moment, for Sligo Rovers to only be 2 points clear of the Limbs, it really isn't great viewing. I'm looking at the next three fixtures here now for Sligo. It's Dundalk away, a trip to Richmond Park, and then Shamrock Rovers come to the showgrounds. Very little points can be expected there. Then it's the big six-pointer against Limerick. Does it all come down to that game now for Sligo Rovers?
Well, it definitely does, but I think the Rovers game, because Rovers aren't in that great form either, even away from home, so I think if we get a point, well, hopefully get 3 points there, but if we get a point off him, it wouldn't be too bad. But trying to get points off Dundalk and Pats, it doesn't look promising, but hopefully against Limerick we'll come away with 3 points. We need to get 3 points against Limerick.
Between the Stripes LOI podcast is proudly sponsored by Flomax. For all your compressed air, vacuum and industrial equipment needs, simply visit flomax.ie.
Whew, so we finally reached the end, folks. That has been a bumper edition. I'm absolutely wrecked after that one. I want to thank John for joining me again this week. He's just shot off. He's off to do a training session with his Ard under 13 sides. They're in a cup final this weekend, so best wishes to my co-host for that one. Thanks to all our guests who joined us tonight. An excellent show, I hope you agree. As always, any support you can give us, we're on iTunes, subscription or review there. You can get us on Audioboom, Mixcloud, Pocket Cast, Podcast Republic, or any good Android podcasting app. So please do follow us on any of those devices. We're on Twitter at Between Stripes. We always appreciate a follow and a tweet if you're listening to the show. On Facebook, Between the Stripes. And as I mentioned at the start of the show there, there was an excellent interview on our website, betweenthestripes.ie, with our guest tonight, Sean Dillon. So all about his time in Scotland and his great success with Montrose recently. Thanks to everyone that joined us. We will speak to you again next week, folks.
Subscribe to Between the Stripes LOI podcast now on iTunes, Audioboom, Mixcloud, Pocket Cast or Podcast Republic, and never miss an episode. You can follow us on Twitter at Between Stripes or like us on Facebook and Instagram by searching Between the Stripes. Add us on Snapchat. Our username is BTS1924. While for all the latest League of Ireland news and updates, you can visit BetweenTheStripes.ie. Until next week, thanks for listening.